Radio Prague News.
The country's trade unions have said that 100,000 public sector employees will take part in a major strike on Wednesday. The Patients Association has said it will send staff to hospitals taking part in the strike to make sure that care for patients does not suffer. And Czech industrial output rose by 6.9% in October, year on year. The country's trade unions have said that 100,000 public sector employees will take part in Wednesday's day-long strike, protesting a 10% cut by the government in next year's budget. Union representatives have warned that the cuts, hand-in-hand with an amendment to the labor code, will heavily impact public sector salaries. Speaking at a meeting of the umbrella union CMKOS on Tuesday, union leader Yaroslav Zavagil said that along with strikers, an additional 100,000 workers not taking part would at least pledge support. He noted that the Minister for Labor and Social Affairs had barred employees from some state branches from striking, namely staff at social services and employment offices. In addition to the strike on Wednesday, demonstrations have been scheduled to take place in 21 towns and cities. In related news, the Czech Patients Association has said it will send staff to hospitals taking part in Wednesday's strike to ensure patient care is not compromised. Some hospitals involved will have reduced regimes on the day, with staff on duty wearing pins expressing support for strikers. Other facilities are planning on full operations as usual. The trade unions have stressed that care for patients during the strike must in no way suffer, and the strike itself has gotten the full backing of the Czech Medical Chamber. The Czech Industry and Trade Minister Martin Kocourek signed a declaration on cooperation in nuclear energy with U.S. government officials in Washington. That on Monday. The declaration should foster greater Czech-U.S. nuclear cooperation in both the commercial and scientific areas, Mr. Kocourek said. The agreement is linked to a bid by the U.S.-based firm Westinghouse for a multi-billion deal for the construction of new blocks at the Czech nuclear plant at Temelín. Czech and American officials have also discussed intensifying trade between the two countries. Czech industrial output rose by 6.9% in October year-on-year, according to government figures released on Tuesday. The increase was lower than the previous month when production rose by 12.4%. Growing production in October was driven by the car, metalworking, and electronic industries, while the biggest drop in production was registered in food and the woodworking industries. The value of new orders rose by 12.6% year-on-year. And finally, just a quick look at the weather now. The next few days should be overcast with a chance of freezing rain. Daytime temperatures should reach highs between -3 and 0 degrees Celsius. I'm Jan Wellinger, and that's the end of the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I am Ruth Franíková. Coming up in today's program, the Czech Republic is bracing itself for what is being billed as the biggest protest since the Velvet Revolution. With a massive decline in membership, where do unions now stand in Czech society? And we hear about a new Czech equivalent of the WikiLeaks website, with organizers promising to release a few bombshells of their own.
There are certainly going to be interesting information going to be released, and we expect that we are going to get even more information from the public.
Then later we visit the Anglican congregation in Prague. All that coming up, so please stay with us. The Czech Republic is bracing itself for what is being billed as the biggest protest since the Velvet Revolution. On Wednesday, around 100,000 public sector workers will hold a day-long strike to express their opposition to government plans to cut their salaries next year. The strike will primarily affect schools and hospitals, but other institutions are expected to join as well. For details of the strike, Jan Richter now joins me in the studio. Jan, what will happen tomorrow?
Well, Ruth, according to the trade unions, we'll see the biggest protest by public employees since the fall of communism, since 1989. The unions expect that 100,000 people will go on strike, and another 100,000 will support the action in one way or another. This concerns mainly workers in hospitals who cannot go on strike, but will wear some kind of badge or some kind of symbol in support of the action. Then some 40,000 people are expected to show up for rallies that will be held around the country in around 20 cities and towns. And as for the services that will be affected, of course, hospitals. Most hospitals will be running weekend service. The trade unions say that patients will not be turned down, but the doctors in those hospitals, of course, tried to make no appointments for tomorrow. So the service should be there, but limited.
And what about schools?
Some 500 schools around the country will be closed altogether, while another 2,000 schools will provide limited service again. This basically means, in this case, that children will have to do without lunch and parents will have to pick them up after school because the after-school care service will not be there. Union leaders also advise people to leave any errands they might have at offices and institutions to a minimum, because it's not quite clear which offices will work and to what extent. Apparently, the Labour and Social Affairs Minister banned all the employees under him from joining the strike, which the trades unions are calling a breach of the constitution, and said that they were considering legal action. But generally, Czechs don't seem to be too annoyed by the strike. At Tuesday's news conference, union leader Jaroslav Zavadil quoted a recent survey which suggests that most people support the action.
According to the survey, some 60% of people agree with tomorrow's strike. While perhaps more interestingly, some 54% of people would support a general strike. So you can see that things are beginning to move in the society. And many people think it's not just a willful strike, as the Prime Minister said, which I think is absolutely nonsense.
Jan, what is the reason for the strike?
The reason for the strike is simple. The centre-right Czech government wants to have a balanced budget in about the year 2016. Now, part of the austerity measures that should be introduced next year include a 10% cut in the overall chapter for the salaries of public employees and the public sector. The government also wants to change the way these employees are paid. Unlike today, when they're paid according to the number of years they have spent in their jobs, they should be paid according to their performance. But the trade unions, of course, argue that this will, in some cases, mean even bigger cuts than the 10%, and also will leave employees much more at the will of their bosses, which is something they really want to change.
And has the government shown any will to compromise on this issue?
Well, Prime Minister Petr Nečas and other ministers of his government have been saying all over that they were ready to sit down with the unions and negotiate, but they have not really agreed to any kind of softening of these measures. The government did make some minor concessions in September after about 40,000 people first protested these plans, but Mr. Nečas has been rather firm in both the 10% cut and the changes to the system as such. The government is in fact meeting Tuesday night to talk about possibly increasing teacher salaries. Prime Minister Nečas said the timing had nothing to do with the strike, but it's kind of difficult to not to see the connection there. But I think for any kind of outcome, we will have to wait until after the strike takes place. It will also depend very much on how many people will join. But the government has more reforms on its agenda, including the very sensitive issue of the pension system and healthcare. So we might be hearing people talking about the general strike even more than there now.
Jan Richter, thank you very much. Wednesday's strike, organized by unions to protest government plans to cut the public sector workforce and wages, is said to be the biggest demonstration of organized labor since workers' protests in 1989 helped topple the communist regime. But away from this show of force, Czech unions have been continuously shedding members, with some suggesting the strike is actually a demonstration of weakness. Chris Johnston looks at where unions now stand in Czech society.
Lidé, zaměstnanci, hlasují o významu odborů nohama, prostě tím, že z nich odchází.
Prime Minister Petr Nečas there in a television interview over the weekend, accusing unions of staging Wednesday's strike to draw attention to themselves. He said workers had already voted with their feet and left the ranks of organised labour in the Czech Republic in droves. The Prime Minister's assertion that Wednesday's action is just a sort of tactical advance by the unions to hide their weakness is questionable. But the figures for union membership in the Czech Republic does not make happy reading for Labour leaders in the country. According to the biggest trade union grouping and the organiser of Wednesday's action, the Czech and Moravian Confederation of Trades Unions, its affiliated membership fell by more than three quarters between 1995 and 2009. Membership of the 32 affiliated unions came to 470,000 in mid-2009 in a country of 10.5 million. The next biggest union grouping in the country, the Association of Independent Unions, claims just 100,000 members. The sharp drop in membership is typical across the whole of Central and Eastern Europe. In fact, Czech unions are far from the worst hit over recent years. Between 2005 and 2008, the biggest Czech workers' organisation suffered a 15% fall in members. The equivalent body in neighbouring Slovakia saw membership slump by more than a third. Overall, Czech unions have, over the last years, hardly taken much of a militant stand compared with their much more hands-on, tools-down attitude of organised labour in, for example, France. The strike rate is one of the lowest in Europe. But powerful unions, such as at carmaker Škoda Auto, have shown they can win concessions from bosses without strikes. So are Czech unions belatedly seeking to grab headlines and attention to stave off a relentless decline? Are they dinosaurs in a new, more dynamic world? Aleš Kropa, Deputy Director of the Research Institute for Labour and Social Affairs, say many trends in society have been working against the unions.
I think there is a greater individualism in society. People are more reliant on themselves. In parallel to that, there is a more general transformation of working conditions and organization of the labor market. There is the shift from factory work and traditional organization to employment of much fewer workers. There is the change in organization to something which is much less vertical and has a more level structure and such like.
But he says that unions should not be written off, and there could already be indications that they are making a comeback.
There are signs that some union associations can get or are attempting to get more members. There are also new types of organizations that have evolved. This is in part due to the fact that foreign companies have come to the Czech Republic, which have a stricter attitude towards unions at home. But this has not prevented organizations being formed here, so it is possible to more or less stop this decline.
Mr. Kropa says it's too early to say whether this has happened. But even before Wednesday's action, polls have shown the public to be more on the side of the unions than of the government.
That report was by Chris Johnston. The latest WikiLeaks release of classified information has been dominating world headlines for over a week, with the latest twist Tuesday's arrest of the website's founder on sexual assault charges. Now the Czech Republic is set to get its own internet forum for material the authorities would prefer to keep under wraps, with the imminent launch of a similar site by the small political grouping the Czech Pirate Party. Ian Willoughby spoke to one of its leaders, Jakub Michálek.
We have two systems. One system is going to be a mirror, that means an exact copy of the WikiLeaks website that is now on. And the second web that we are going to launch is going to be PirateLeaks, that is going to be open for all materials from the Czech Republic.
And why are you launching your own PirateLeaks site?
Yes. We are launching this because we think that openness is very important for the modern government, and we want to show that this principle of openness is worth it.
And
we want to have a place where journalists can find materials for their work and where the public can find out information about things that they are interested in.
Speaking right now, do you have any information that you believe could have important implications?
Yes, we do.
And when can we expect to see this released?
We would like to launch the whole project of PirateLeaks in about 10 days.
So do you feel then like you're sitting on some kind of a political time bomb at the moment?
Well, there are certainly going to be interesting information going to be released, and we expect that we are going to get even more information from the public, from people who are interested in this project and who want to make information open.
Ultimately, what is the aim of this site of yours?
The global change of policy when the openness of government is concerned. We would like the authorities, the departments, to disclose the information without any prior notice, to give it to the media, to put it on their websites, and just to have open government. That is our goal.
And do you know, are there any other Czech sites who are, or Czech organizations, that are preparing something similar to this?
There were several individuals I've heard of, and we are trying to contact them. We are trying to include them in our project and cooperate with them.
Some people might say that you are simply jumping on the bandwagon of WikiLeaks because it's such a big international media story at the moment.
Yes, of course. We are trying to use this issue to make openness the topic and to go forth with our goals.
Julian Assange, the head of WikiLeaks, is under a lot of personal pressure at the moment. He's been guarding his whereabouts and he's being questioned by the police. Are you concerned you could meet a fate like that?
We hope that the authorities of the Czech Republic will not go for that. I don't think there are any issues that could be against us, that could be used in such a way. And I personally do not believe that such accusations are based on truth.
So can we expect in 2 weeks from now that your site will be a big Czech news story?
Well, I hope so.
Jakub Michalek of the Czech Pirate Party speaking there to my colleague Ian Willoughby. Just a reminder that you are listening to the International Service of Czech Radio broadcasting from Prague. Now in the final part of our program today, we visit the Anglican congregation which meets every Sunday at St. Clement's Church in Prague's Old Town.
If you are looking for somewhere for Christian worship in Prague, there are several places where you can attend regular Sunday services in English. One thriving English-speaking Christian community is the Anglican congregation, which meets every Sunday at St. Clement's Church in the Old Town. Services are well attended, but in the 20 years since the fall of communism, the Anglican chaplaincy has not always had a smooth ride, and for the second time in just over a decade, its future is uncertain.
I'm the Reverend Ricky Yates, and I'm the chaplain of St. Clement's Anglican Episcopal Church here in Prague, and I've been here since September 2008. During the communist era, there were occasional services in the British Embassy looked after by a clergyman who'd come by train from Vienna. Since the Velvet Revolution, there have been regular services from 1990, when the congregation moved from the British Embassy to share St. Clement's Church, which belongs to the Czech Evangelical Brethren.
And it's worth adding that St. Clement's is actually a beautiful church, isn't it? It's a late Gothic church down by the river, just on the edge of the old town of Prague.
Yes, it's a wonderful building. Christian worship has taken place on the site for 1,000 years. The building itself has Romanesque foundations.
Now, when we think of the Anglican Church, we think of England or Britain. But in fact, the Anglican community in Prague is very international, isn't it?
Yes. As is, of course, the Anglican Communion across the world. And so within our congregation, we have a minority of Brits and probably a minority of people who are Anglican as such by original background. But basically, on any Sunday, we have into double figure nationalities within the congregation.
In the late 1990s, Prague's Anglican congregation suddenly found itself, rather unexpectedly, on the wrong side of Czech law. It became an accidental victim of legislation that aimed to clamp down on religious sects, some of them far from transparent, that were trying to take hold in the Czech Republic. David Holton, Professor of Liturgy at Prague's Charles University, explains.
The churches receive money from the state, And a law was passed that required a certain number of members for each church who were required to be Czech citizens or permanent residents. There was no possible way that the Anglican congregation would ever have the number sufficient to meet that quota.
The Anglican chaplaincy found a rather ingenious solution. Ricky Yates again.
Our legal status here in the Czech Republic since the year 2000 is as the English-speaking parish of the Old Catholic Church in the Czech Republic.
What the congregation did was to place itself under the wing of the one Czech church that traditionally enjoys full communion with the Church of England. Its name, the Old Catholic Church, makes it sound both very ancient and Roman Catholic. But in fact, as Professor Holton explains, the Old Catholic Church is neither.
The Old Catholic Church is a very, very small church. It's a particularly small church in this country because it's had a very sad history. Its origins are from the 19th century, and the issues surrounding its creation were reactions among Roman Catholic scholars against the First Vatican Council, the idea of the universal jurisdiction of the papacy, the dogma of the Immaculate Conception, and the dogma of papal infallibility. It attracted, first of all, a lot of German professors in Germany, and consequently it attracted a lot of Germanophones here in Bohemia.
So we're talking here about mainly about the region known as the Sudetenland, the border regions.
Almost all the parishes were in the old Sudetenland, except for one Czech-speaking congregation here in Prague. And the tragedy was, of course, after the end of the war with the expulsion of the Germans, 95% of the old Catholic church population was expelled. After that, they had a very dotted history because the then bishop refused to collaborate with the communists. He was declared insane by the government, removed from his see, not allowed to set foot in the part of the country that contained his own cathedral. And it was really only in the waning years of communism, and particularly after communism, that the church was allowed to be reborn. And now, quite interestingly, the vast majority of the parishes are in Czech-speaking parts of the country that had no German predecessors.
By placing itself under the old Catholic Church, the Anglican parish in Prague has secured its status in the Czech Republic. But now it is facing another problem, familiar to congregations around the world, that of money.
The main problem really that has arisen is that whereas in the early years after the fall of communism, you had quite a number of wealthy business people who came here to head up the Czech branch of international companies, some of whom were people of faith and therefore worshipped at the church, whereas now those jobs tend now to be held by Czechs. And what the congregation these days is made up of people who predominantly do not earn great sums. A lot of people are teachers of English as a foreign language, students, and therefore raising the money that we need to raise, which is about 1.3 million crowns a year, about $1,300 US a week to run the church. And that often surprises people, but as I said, so much of the costs are paying the chaplain, paying for housing, as well as obviously the rental costs and other expenditure incurred in running a church.
And so right now you're facing a financial shortfall.
Indeed. And although in 2009 we've increased our income, we still have a shortfall of over 300,000 crowns for the year. And unless we start getting in as much as it costs to run, then the reserves are likely to run out by the end of 2010.
Some people, including David Holton, see the solution in integrating the Anglican congregation more fully into the old Catholic Church, with the possibility, at least in the longer term, of the parish being led by an English-speaking Czech priest from the old Catholic Church.
That's certainly possible, and that certainly would be desirable, because de jure, St. Clement's is a fully incorporated part of the old Catholic Church, but the reality is that there are only very few people who can take advantage of that. What's quite significant, though, is that the status of St. Clement's within the Old Catholic Church here has become a model for the Anglican Old Catholic relationships in Europe as a whole.
But not everyone would welcome this change. St. Clement's is a broad church, and the Anglican chaplain in Prague has to play a delicate balancing act in an international congregation including everything from Methodists to High Church Anglicans. Any shift in this equilibrium could lead to a split in the congregation. Most people I spoke to seemed in favour of keeping the status quo. But if the chaplain is to stay for the coming years, as Ricky Yates himself points out, the congregation is going to have to dig a fair bit deeper.
Really, we have to say to the congregation, and those particularly who come occasionally to worship, that if you want the congregation to be here, you've got to pay for it and try to educate people what it actually does cost.
David Vaughan with that edition of Talking Point, which was first broadcast in February this year. And I'm afraid that's all we have time for today. This is Ruth Franjková saying thanks for joining us and take care.